How do you take a trash compactor, attach it to binoculars, and make it cute and cuddly? Well, the creators of the new film WALL-E managed to pull that off. WALL-E, the robot, is a rusty piece of metal machinery, and he's become an instant classic. Matthew Battles writes about this in the Boston Globe, and he talks about how animators made WALL-E so endearing, how they take other characters like Mickey Mouse and E.T. and figure out ways to make them more appealing to us humans. Now, before we cue in the collective, tell us what your favorite animated character is and who he is or she and why. Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, as always, is talk@npr.org. You can also share your experiences with us on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Matthew Battles, the contributor to the science, to the ideas section, rather, of the Boston Globe, is with us from the studios of the Christian Science Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, Matthew, what makes a robot like WALL-E so charming?
Well, you know, it has to do, I think, more than anything else with our evolutionary background as human beings. What robot designers have discovered is the same thing that animators discovered, Walt Disney discovered in the 1920s, that if you throw a few cuteness cues at us as viewers, you're able to win our hearts very quickly. And you can take even a very sort of humdrum, rusty bucket of bolts and throw some big eyes at us and some clumsy movements and win our hearts very quickly.
Let's talk about WALL-E for a moment. He is a trash compactor on tracks, like tank tracks almost, with a binocular head and these stubbly fingers. But actually, all of those things were very carefully planned out, right?
Yeah, I think they were. You know, in fact, Andrew Stanton, the writer and director of WALL-E, talks about how looking at a pair of binoculars gave him an instant vision of character. He saw a head there. But what works for us as viewers is that those are big eyes in those binoculars. And those big eyes, again, cue us to care about this little creature. The same thing with his squat body, with his stubby arms and clumsy movements. These are all infantile features, and it's the infantile that gets us going.
It's almost the way Walt Disney made a mouse such a cute and enduring figure, a creature.
That's right. Go ahead.
And oftentimes we hear about panda bears, for example. Panda bears being the most popular animal in the zoo, the most popular character for children. But of course, rats, for example, you know, it's difficult to make a rat cute.
It is indeed. And, you know, Stephen Jay Gould famously pointed out in an essay once, Mickey Mouse started out decidedly more rat-like. He had a really thin tail and a thin nose, and he looked like a rat in Steamboat Willie, his 1929 debut. And over the years, Disney transformed him into a cherubic mouse, much easier to handle.
Now, you write about how some folks at MIT are actually studying this. They're studying robots and have been studying this for a while. What have they discovered?
Well, yeah, there's a number of researchers at MIT, some of whom are well known in the media, Rodney Brooks and Cynthia Brazil, who've worked on robots that that have humanoid features and not only act in a humanoid fashion, but also can learn to respond to human social cues. Now, the thing that's really interesting about their work to me is that they're not trying to create an android, you know, a simulacrum of a human being, a machine that would convince us that it's a human. What they're trying to do is create a functional machine that can do tasks but can also interact with human beings, about which human beings can feel more comfortable, and that can learn from us.
Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing about this film is there's no dialogue in the first 40 minutes, but it's almost impossible not to be bowled over by the charm of this trash compactor robot with a binocular head.
Yeah, it is quite striking. A number of critics have commented on it. And I think, again, that gets to the sort of infantile nature of WALL-E. If he had a sophisticated vocabulary, I don't think he'd strike the same chords in viewers that he does as a kind of monosyllabic infant robot.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a caller. Scott is on the line with us from Twin Falls, Idaho. Scott, welcome.
Hi. This is a very interesting topic. I'm really interested in animation, and I have kids, so it's perfect for me. One of the most amazing animated characters, and it's a little bit off the subject of what you're talking about, because the characters you've been describing all have, you know, faces, features like that that we can all relate to, but the Disney Aladdin had a magic carpet. That was incredibly expressive, and you knew exactly what it was feeling and thinking and doing, and the expressions that it was trying to, and the that it was trying to relate just through the movements of this rug. Basically, it was a really really interesting and really neat, and struck me as one of the most amazing animated features I've ever seen, characters I've ever seen. So enough of my comments up here. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Scott. And that's interesting, the point he raises, Matthew Battles, because gestures are obviously so important in creating an animated character that people, humans, will find appealing.
They are indeed, and I think you can take something that's quite distant in terms of design and function from an organic form and animate it in a way that makes it come alive. I think also of another Disney classic, Beauty and the Beast, and the many inanimate objects that are animated in that story and become characters. Even the Czech avant-garde animator Jan Švankmajer often does these stop-motion animated classics that use things like egg beaters, and they come alive as well. So in the gesture, in the drama of the movement, you get character in ways that you can't get from a static representation.
We're talking to Matthew Battles. He's a contributor to the ideas section at the Boston Globe. We're talking about The Huggable Machine, an article he's written about what makes the robot Wall-E so charming. Give us a call. Tell us who or what your favorite animated character is and why. Our number here is 800-989-8255, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Matthew Battles, I want to ask you about the hands, Wall-E's hands. He's got two fingers on each side, mm-hmm. but these sort of stubbly, bulky, metallic fingers. Right. But there's something very compelling about them as well.
Well, you know, yes, there is. And I mean, it's two stubby fingers and a thumb. And I think that thumb is important in a way that a kind of classic robot hand, a kind of two-fingered claw, would not be, like a lobster claw. I think that thumb adds a human dimension. Also, there's an extent to which a robot's task in an animated film is to overcome his robot being, to overcome his metallic nature, and with the way Wall-E gestures, the way he tenderly picks a shoot of a plant, these are movements that show him becoming more human-like despite the fact that he's made out of metal.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Martin. He's on the line with us from Santa Clara, California. Martin, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Certainly like the show. The only comment I'll make is that, you know, certainly Wall-E, I saw the movie, I thought it was great, but it seems for animated characters, on top of being infantile, it's also the diminutive position that they're small, like Donkey and Shrek. Very rarely do you find yourself finding some attachment to a very large animated character like the Iron Giant. The other thing, though, I was going to comment on is that in robotics, though, there's a whole zone, once you approach, you know, the fact that they're too human-like, then we actually abhor them. And so I'm wondering if, like, successful animated movies like Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, where, these characters actually you look human, they don't do as well as animated characters that are very childlike. Anyway, I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks so much, Martin. And Matthew?
Yeah, Martin makes a great point. When you look at the whole range of sort of representations of robots in the history of film and television, you get these menacing androids, these built objects that scare us with their uncanny similarity to human beings. And some great science fiction narratives are built out of that problem. I think that was most important sort of early in the middle of the 20th century, when writers like Isaac Asimov were writing their kind of epic epics and space operas about robots, the fear that we had that technology would take our place. And while that fear is still very important to us, I think our worries about it have become more nuanced. Martin's also certainly correct in how important the stature is of these robots. Wally clearly has a debt to E.T. the extraterrestrial, mm-hmm. who also looks up with those big limpid eyes. By contrast, the nemesis of Wally in this film, the autopilot, he hangs from the ceiling. He's always looking down on us, always glowering down with this big red eye that mm-hmm. comes right out of 2001, A Space Odyssey, Hal's eye from that film.
And he mentions, of course, as you say, the diminutive features like a human baby. And that's really part of the thinking that goes into this, right?
It is indeed. And again, citing Stephen Jay Gould and also the work by Rodney Brooks and Sidney Brazil at MIT, if we want to interact, if roboticists want us to interact with their machines, they do well to emulate these stubby creatures. In fact, a more recent version of the robots built at MIT, Cog and Kismet, a more recent version actually has a furry face and tufted ears and looks like a creature from a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Jesse. He's on the line with us from Nevada. Jesse, welcome.
Yeah, hi. I'm 32, and when I was a kid, R2-D2 was top-notch. He was the coolest dude, right? So as time progressed, you know, I got a little older, and then Short Circuit came out, and I was just wondering, you know, if there was a planning behind the design of Wally around Johnny Number 5 and what the reasoning was for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of people have mentioned the resemblance to Short Circuit, to R2-D2 as well. There's also a robot marooned on the moon in the Nick Park Wallace and Gromit classic, A Grand Day Out. Wally's movements seem very similar to that robot as well. I think all of these robots are in a kind of line of family descent. They're all related to each other. And I think you can trace that relationship back to Mickey Mouse.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, thanks so much for the call.
Sure thing.
And Jennifer is on the line with us from Sacramento, California. Jennifer?
Hi. I was calling to say my favorite character is Donald Duck.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
He's so human. He represents the frustrations we feel in life where despite your best efforts, sometimes things just don't go your way. And he shows the imperfections that we have. And I love the fact that there's characters that aren't always perfect and don't always have the fairy tale ending, mm-hmm. despite the fact they're animated.
And Matthew Bettles, I mean, is that the case? I mean, there are certain animals that are easier to make cute. And I mean, Donald Duck, you know, he's a duck. Some people might regard
that's
ducks.
Very true. Yeah, no, that's very true. I think he's a duck is easier than a goose, and Donald looks more like a duckling than a duck. So in that sense, he's got everything in his favor. He's white and chubby and fluffy, and yes, it also has to do with story. You know, a character like Donald Duck, he's an organic creature at heart, and so he doesn't face one of the problems that robot characters face, which is that somebody built them. They have to have a reason to exist. In Wally's case, that becomes an occasion for story in and of itself. So animators and storytellers who work with robots work with that limitation as well, but can turn it into something on their side.
Jennifer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And let's go to one last call. Shiv is on the air with us from Sunnyvale, California.
Hi. My favorite, I wouldn't exactly call it my favorite, but Eve from the movie Wall-E is definitely an interesting character mm-hmm. because, like you mentioned, Wall-E has eyes, hands, and even legs. And the tracks that he uses are actually legs. But Eve, all they had was the LED, blue LED lights and the eyes. And I think they did an amazing job in transforming Eve from an angry robo in the beginning to a human robo at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Eve is a great example of this kind of thing, actually, and a great example also of how the audience for these movies, I mean, we're used to technology now in a way that we weren't even 10 or 20 years ago, and so we're personifying the cell phones and the iPods in our lives, and it's very easy with a few cues to make these things come to life for us.
Mm-hmm. Shiv, thanks so much for the call. And we'll go to one final call. Julia's on the line with us from Overland Park in Kansas. Julia?
Hi. One of my favorite characters, and they've never done, to my knowledge, a full length based on it, is the Lamps, the Disney Pixar Lamps.
Yeah. Matthew?
The mother and child.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, that lamp?
Yeah, well, they have starred in their own shorts, but you know, there's an interesting thing about the lamps, that they actually prefigure, I believe, an invention that comes out of the MIT robotics laboratories, a lamp, a desk lamp, that responds to the person sitting at the desk, that turns on, that cues into our eye movements and lights what we need lit, that reminds us of things we need to look at. There's one case of art inspiring science, I think. Mm-hmm.
Julia, cool. Thanks. Yeah, Julia, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Thank you.
Bye. And Matthew Battles, essentially animators now we're going to be looking at WALL-E and presumably modeling future characters on him.
He certainly will become part of the family history of the cute and cuddly machine. There's no doubt about that.
An instant classic, as they said. Matthew Battles was with us from the studios of the Christian Science Center in Boston. He's a contributor to the ideas section of the Boston Globe. His article is called The Huggable Machine. It appeared in today's paper. Matthew Battles, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow, we will talk about age and politics. When is old too old? Join us for that. I'm Guy Raz. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.